This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. As you know, we've been going previewing NFL teams this week as we've got it started 8 weeks until basically Labor Day week, where we get not only the conclusion of the opening weekend of college football, but then, of course, the Thursday night game to kick off the NFL season. We're starting in the NFC East. We did the Washington Commanders yesterday. Focus a little bit more on the division today. And I was thinking about this because last week we were talking about the 10 new head coaches that are going to be in this league and coming into different circumstances. You know, you have Lovie Smith with the Houston Texans taking over a bad football team and looking to bring it back up again, with whether it's going to be with a different quarterback down the road, but Lovie Smith has got a big, huge blueprint, you know, to just sort of go, hey, let's build this team up. But then you've got a guy like Todd Bowles, who's got to take over Tampa Bay from Bruce Arians, a team that is built to win a Super Bowl, and Josh McDaniels, who's taking over in Las Vegas on a team that went to the playoffs to get to the next step. Staying with the theme, though, of the NFC East, Brian Daboll, who has done a magnificent job with Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, is now the new head coach of the New York Giants. And he's got a very interesting situation with the Giants because they've got to figure out whether or not Daniel Jones is going to be their quarterback going forward. So he is walking into a situation where the quarterback is not his, but he's got to determine whether or not the quarterback is going to be his. And that makes for sort of a season in flux. When everybody is trying to win just enough games to make a playoff run, and certainly Brian Daboll and the Giants will say all the right things about wanting to make the postseason and we're here to win and all that stuff, it's got to be a little bit frustrating for fans to know that a lot of this is going to be based on the evaluation of the quarterback and where the future is going to go. You have to take three steps back sometimes to take enough steps forward to become a championship team. Now, some teams don't have to take three steps back. They have to take 10 steps back. And other teams only have to take one step back. But for the Giants, there's enough to go here that they have to figure out the quarterback situation pretty quickly as Brian Daboll is going to start molding this team into who he wants it to be. We'll talk about them as well as the other teams in the NFC East this morning. But when we come back, we'll get into college football because the Big 12 has got media days coming up. And there are some things on the table for that conference. We'll talk about that next. As we get you going on a Tuesday morning, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue this morning. Happy Tuesday to you as we're rolling along here on Sports Map Radio. And again, NFC East week. As we continue, we're going to have a division a week all the way through to the start of the NFL season. Hey, looking to save money this year? Look at Allstate. You can get the protection you need at the low rates you want. With Allstate, you can lower your rates, not your expectations. Visit Allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. But it's not only NFL preview time on this show. It's also a time to look at the college football season because media days will be coming up this week and next week and the week after. I was kind of looking this over because I was like, man, these media days are all going to be bunched up. And then I realized I had to pause and I go, well, you know, no offense to some other conferences, but there's only three that really matter. The SEC media days are all next week in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame. They begin Monday. They run through Thursday. The Big 12 media days are going to be this week. They're going to start tomorrow and Thursday. They only need 2 days, less teams. They're going to be in Arlington at AT&T Stadium. The Big 10, that is going to be 2 days. Now, they have a lot of teams, but nevertheless, July 26th and the 27th, they will have a lot more teams, but July 26th and 27th. Sorry, Pac-12, ACC, I don't know what to do with you, but I'm not really all that interested in your media days. Nevertheless, and eventually no one will be interested in your media days if we keep up with the sort of teams sort of jettisoning your conferences. But the Big 12, again, is going to start tomorrow, and they have a brand new commissioner, And they're going to lose Texas and Oklahoma down the road. They don't know when. It's supposed to be 2025, but you know how these things work, right? There's always can be negotiations. You can always sort of figure out, all right, maybe you can leave a little early if you pay this penalty, or maybe you stay a little late. Who knows? But right now, this conference is in flux, and Brett Yormark is the new commissioner taking over for Bob Bowlesby. What he has is he's got new teams coming in 2023. Cincinnati, Houston, BYU, and UCF are going to be joining the conference. But of course, down the road, he's losing two mega teams in Texas and Oklahoma. But the Big 12 is trying to stay viable in an ocean of changes that are happening in college football, where there might be just two dominant conferences in the SEC and the Big 10, as they are gobbling up anybody that might feel like they don't have a place in this world. As we've said many times, I think the one thing about this is that college football changing its conferences and changing its look is not going to affect you directly. It really won't. If you're a fan of a team in the SEC like I am, like my wife is, like my son is, like our family is, we just have new opponents, and the road to get to where we want to go may get a lot more difficult, right? If South Carolina was to win the East down the road, it's going to be a lot more difficult to do that when you add more teams. Okay, fine. But the reality of it is having more teams in the conferences means a lot bigger success for the conference. But that doesn't affect me. But when I think about this and all of this movement, it does get me thinking about why they're doing it in the first place. And I know it's because of money, but at the same time, money has always been around, right? Money has always been a part of what college athletics is. The pursuit of making as much money as possible to fund whatever it is that you're funding has always been the goal of the revenue sports. If you're USC, it has always been about making money. If you're Texas, it's always been about making money with your football program. Same thing at Oklahoma, same thing at UCLA, Notre Dame, you name it. Why now? Why now are schools looking to join up with mega conferences? Media rights are going up. That's fine. But again, it's not like Texas and Oklahoma were sitting around in the 80s and 90s going, you know, it'll be great. By the time we get to 2025, these things will be through the roof. We need to plan our exit 35 years from now. They could have done it at any time. The money was always available. Media rights were always sort of escalating. You could have picked any time, and any time would have been fine. What is it about now? What is it about this period of time in college athletics that is sort of making and forcing people's hands? I think it's just the domino effect, to be honest with you. I think it's when one does it, then it feels like there is a need for others to do it. I think it didn't start necessarily with Missouri and Texas A&M, because the Big East was gobbled up by the ACC when they grabbed all of the football-playing Big East schools and left just the basketball programs to form their own conference. So it's not exactly like there's a point where you could point to. But I think when you're Texas A&M, for example, and you're in the SEC, Texas is paying attention. I think they're looking and seeing where that conference is going and what they have on their other side. Because it's not just a rivalry thing. They're just in the backyard, right? So you're looking at the Aggies, and all of a sudden it's been 10 years since they've been in the SEC. Revenue is going up. Recruiting's a little bit better. Exposure's a little bit better. Now, if you're Texas, you have your own network, but at the same time, you're looking at your conference and going, I don't think people are jumping up and down when we've got that big game against Kansas. I don't think people are all excited when they're jumping up and down when we got that game against, you know, Iowa State or whoever. And some of these teams have been good. But Texas A&M has played some mega games against Alabama, has played some great games against Auburn, have played some great games against other SEC institutions. Missouri, for example, when they got to the SEC, won the division, I think, 2 years in a row. And oh, by the way, on a side note to that, I do remember SEC fans saying to both Missouri and Texas A&M in the early 2010s, yeah, you'll love getting to the SEC. Let me tell you what, we can't wait to give you the welcome to the conference feel. You know, like, this ain't the Big Eight. This ain't the Big 12. Those teams had success almost immediately. As soon as they got to the conference, Texas A&M delivered the SEC Johnny Manziel. And Missouri played for the SEC title twice in the first, like, 3 years they were in the conference. So I think that has a little bit to do with it. And again, once a domino falls, they all start kind of falling. Because you don't want to be left out in the cold. Principle and sort of tradition and nostalgia are going to go by the wayside. Your job is to bring in as much revenue as possible. Again, we equated this at the time, I think a week ago or so, of a CEO. Yeah, CEOs get paid a lot of money. Their only job is to make shareholders rich. That's it. That's the only job. Their job is to run the business so efficiently and operationally that money flows into the system. And money goes right to the investors. And so if you are a conference commissioner, if you are somebody that not only is a conference commissioner, but maybe even a school president or an athletic director, part of your job is to figure out how do you maximize as much money as you possibly can for the conference. And if it means that your school now is part of a Midwestern conglomerate, even though you're in sunny Southern California, that's exactly what you do. And even if you are a school that has been traditionally part of this sort of Southwestern organization, this sort of Big Eight, SWAC, Big 12 program like Oklahoma and Texas, in those glory days of those Thanksgiving weekend games against Nebraska or the big, of course, Red River Showdown. And, of course, remember the Texas A&M battles before Texas A&M bolted out of the conference. Those sort of traditional games and traditional environments, if that means you've got to go to the southeastern part of the United States where your Thanksgiving game may be against LSU in Baton Rouge or Florida in Gainesville, I hope it's back to Texas A&M. God hope. Greg Sankey, you know what we all want. Nevertheless, that's what you do. Because you can't leave money on the table. That's one of the biggest problems with being a CEO. And I use that in quotes when I talk about these presidents and these athletic directors and these conference commissioners. You've got to evaluate the entire landscape of what business you are in. And if the business you are in is got money on the table, you go get it. That may not be for everybody. Because not everybody is going to be an attractive team like UCLA, Texas, USC, Oklahoma, and schools like that. But if you're Washington, you're Washington State, you're Oregon, if you are a school in the ACC like North Carolina, Clemson, you got to start looking around and thinking, somehow, we've got to get our hands on a piece of this pie because it ain't coming here. So the Big 12 has got media days this week, and it'll look relatively normal. There's no additional teams in, and there's nobody leaving yet. This thing is going to take a whole nother look next year when four teams are added, and we are still wondering when Texas and Oklahoma are going to figure their way out of that conference and get to the SEC as quickly as they possibly can. Now, again, they said they're going to wait till their media rights are done. We'll see. We'll see. I'll buy it when I see it. But as soon as they can, and as soon as it's economically feasible, they'll do it. Maybe it's economically feasible that they wait for the Big 12 media rights to pass through and a new deal is being organized and restructured. But right now, what you're going to see in the next 2 days following Mike Gundy and Brent Venables and Steve Sarkisian, all of those guys are going to be speaking about their teams, are going to be talking about a conference you are familiar with, knowing tomorrow is going to be very, very, very different. And it's going to be the same in the SEC next week, too, in Atlanta, where all the same usual suspects are going to be there, but they're going to be saving a mental place in their brain for Texas and Oklahoma when that day arrives. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Again, we're talking NFL as well this today as we look at the NFC East all of this week. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
My wife's got an extra room. All right, welcome back. It's Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio. I was waiting for our little fun intro. Did we miss our little fun intro?
It played.
Did it play? I must have been talking to you.
You were talking, yeah.
I was talking to you.
Talking saunas.
I was talking saunas because last night I went to the gym and after I worked out. Now, when I say go to the gym, I want to make this very clear. This is me just trying to get something going and a little bit of shape.
Oh, don't lie, Tony.
Gym
we
bro.
Know you're pumping iron.
Oh, I'm not a gym bro or anything.
You're a muscle
but
head.
I try to go at a time when nobody's there because they have a nice sauna, and I like to go in there and sweat out some, whatever it is that you got to sweat out. And so we were just chatting about that. See, that's what we do. Like, we can chat a bunch about different kind of things. So, but yeah, it was. I enjoy going to this gym when nobody's there. I don't know why. I don't like the big crowd. I don't like the crowds, but I go as late as I can before, you know, still trying to get a little bit of sleep in before the show. But yeah, last night was dead. Nobody was there. A couple people that I went in, worked out, went into the sauna, hung out and left. That was it. That was my night. So, all right. So we're talking to NFC East. So I was asking the question earlier, Brian Daboll, Giants. Now, and again, he's the newest coach in the division, right? Mike McCarthy's running Dallas and Ron Rivera's running Washington. And Nick Sirianni is in his second year with the Eagles. So Brian Daboll, who we've seen this before, right? We've seen coordinators get a lot of attention and then they become head coaches. Nathaniel Hackett is one of them, head coach of the Denver Broncos. He's one of them. Josh McDaniels was that 10 or so years ago when he was the hottest coordinator to be looking for a head coaching job, and the Denver Broncos snatched him up. And I think he did the right thing when it didn't work out and the Broncos let him go. I think he did the right thing by he went to like St. He was on the St. Louis Rams for a bit, like, and then before Belichick was like, yeah, you can come back home. So he went and then he kind of chilled out there for even longer and now is ready to take the leap again, but he's a lot more mature. And I think he's learned a lot. He was very young when he got that job with Denver, and I think he had a Napoleonic complex because he really wanted to run the show like Mike Shanahan, and people in Denver were quick to point out Shanahan earned that over time. I mean, he earned the trust of Pat Bowlen, the owner, winning Super Bowls, but being able to, you know, he worked with Elway and, you know, got those Super Bowls, but it took a while for Shanahan to get full control over the team. But McDaniels kind of wanted that from day one. The Broncos sort of let him do that, and it didn't really work out. But Brian Daboll was that guy. Brian Daboll is, and if you remember, Brian Daboll was also the guy that is kind of involved. It's not him involved, but his situation, his hiring is involved in the Brian Flores lawsuit because Bill Belichick, you know, thought it was Brian Flores who got the job. And
it wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, it wasn't a mistake. Did it on purpose.
No way Bill Belichick makes a simple mistake like that.
Yeah, the more I keep reading this book, It's Better to Be Feared, the more I'm realizing Belichick doesn't make these kind of mistakes. He never has an oops moment. Everything is super calculated to the nth degree. So yeah, the more I'm getting to know more of the background and the way he ran the New England Patriots through this book, it's pretty fascinating. But that's the question that Daboll has is, can he work with Daniel Jones? I think this is, we all talk about our teams, and when you're a fan of a team, you kind of have to go through the ebbs and flow of that team, right? Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, sometimes you need to rebuild. Sometimes it's Super Bowl or nothing, and you only have a short window to do it. And so we all have to kind of go on that ride with your team. And this has been really tough for Giant fans because back in 2019, when Daniel Jones was drafted, he was a quarterback from Duke. David Cutcliffe, everyone liked him in terms of his arm strength, everything like that. But there was, remember how Giant fans weren't really happy with this? There was a little bit like, what? Him? Wait, no. And I think a lot of it was because he wasn't a huge pop that you wanted that quarterback position. And he's had some moments where he's played well enough, but not well enough to be the legit starter that the Giants are going to now put their faith in. So Dable has to come in and use this sort of offensive mindset that he has to see if he can work with Daniel Jones and see if that's where they're heading. So it's not that it's a lost year. No, you never want to do that. You have 50 other guys on the team that you got to, you know, make sure that they're as motivated to be out there on Sunday playing. But he does have to properly evaluate his quarterback situation. Because the regime is gone that drafted Daniel Jones. And like anything else, we talk about this with general managers in sports. When GMs come in, if you're a head coach or a baseball manager or anything along those lines, when a new GM comes in, watch out. They don't want you. They want their own guy. And quarterbacks are kind of in the same boat. The guy that drafted you has got as much invested in your success as you do, right? His reputation is on the line. He wants to make all of the doubters say, oh, no, we were wrong. You did know what you were doing. But those people are gone. They're not there anymore. They have a new GM and a new head coach, and Daniel Jones has no protection. So the only protection that he has is play well. But he's going to play really well. Because this is a franchise now that can look at that quarterback position and say, now it's wide open. We can trade for a veteran, or we can develop another quarterback with the people we have. And oh, by the way, the guy that we have, he did a really good job with Josh Allen. Josh Allen's growth has been marveled by how well that guy, who much like Daniel Jones, was drafted under the, he better be something else, Buffalo. This is interesting, but yeah, nobody's grading him that well. And he was able to be turned into the mega star that he is right now. A lot of it had to do with him getting an opportunity, but also a lot of it had to do with the growth that he got under the Buffalo system and the Buffalo coaching staff. And that's where the Giants are. Again, focusing on the NFC East this week. So if you look at where the Giants are in terms of this fluctuating quarterback situation, now look at where the Eagles are and where Nick Sirianni in his second year has to take this team. This team made the postseason. And Jalen Hurts has got now good, solid weapons around him. The A.J. Brown acquisition on draft day, it was one of those bits of news that was shocking the moment it happened, but then when you pulled back the layer, it wasn't as shocking. The Titans were trying to shed some salary. They didn't want to pay A.J. Brown the kind of money that he was looking for. They found what they thought was an equivalent level of talent in Treylon Burks out of Arkansas. And so they went with Treylon Burks out of Arkansas, saying, well, he's similar size, catching, you know, ball catching ability. We think we can mold him and keep him in a rookie contract situation. So they shipped him, A.J. Brown, to Philadelphia, where they immediately gave him a bunch of money. And so now this is where the Eagles are. I don't look at this division and see a lot of teams ready to pop. When we were talking to Dave Preston about this yesterday, Washington is still... Carson Wentz, we're not sure yet if the marriage between the Commanders and Carson Wentz and Ron Rivera work. We're not really sure if Nick Sirianni's got sort of more magic in the bottle to get Philadelphia one of those three wildcard spots. We're conceding that Dallas is going to win the division because they're really well built from top to bottom, and the Giants are the Giants. They're not going to be the team that is going to run quarterback sneaks near the goal line, but they are going to be a team that is going to fully flush out those who can play under this on this team under Dable and those who can't. So there's a lot of new coaches that are going into the league this year. 10, nearly a third. Some of them have got to take their team back to the postseason and go get some success. Others are got a blank slate. The Giants are kind of in the middle a little bit. There's a little bit of talent there, but they've got a problem at quarterback in that they don't, and they're not committed solely on Daniel Jones. If we continue, Ron Culver and I.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can. At Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Man, oh man, middle of July and the British Open gets started on Thursday. Hello. Here, Tiger Woods drove the ninth green and made an eagle putt in his practice round. Because if you didn't, I'll tell you about it because everybody's focusing on Tiger.
He's going to win this thing, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Plus 6,500 to win the British Open. That's the odds that he's getting.
Take
at St. Andrews.
Bet the house on it.
By the way, I totally forgot to say this about Tiger Woods the other day, but I saw this on Twitter, and I thought it was hilarious. It was one of those things where I mentally put it in my head. So, you know, Tiger Woods and LeBron James as well have been kind of certified billionaires.
Right.
Right? And somebody pointed out on Twitter that Tiger Woods has a net worth of over $1 billion, and he went through a mega expensive divorce. And I totally forgot. I went, that's a good point. That divorce was one of the most, I mean, for an athlete to get divorced where the payout was nine figures, it was remarkable to me. Like, remarkable. Elon got, I want to say, $175 million or something like that out of that deal, getting divorced from Tiger Woods. That is an expensive few minutes hanging out in Perkins Restaurant. Let me tell you that. That's an expensive trip. Good Lord. But anyway, Tiger still made it to $1 billion, despite the fact that a majority of his... They were talking about Tiger. I remember when Jeff Gordon got divorced. Jeff Gordon married a woman named Brooke, who was a Winston Cup girl. She was one of the models. So they became friends, and then they got married. But they ended up getting a divorce. And there was a period of time where she took him to the cleaners, and he had to like live on at somebody else's house till he could get his life together. I mean, she literally had her hand, and a lawyer did in every pocket Jeff Gordon had. And I think Tiger was going through that sort of same thing when he was getting divorced from Elon, but he still managed to still rake in over $1 billion, be worth over $1 billion in his career. See that helicopter he flew in for that pro-am in Ireland? Flew in on a helicopter.
It
was the president of the United States.
Tiger's just doing Tiger things.
And totally doing Tiger things. Plus 6,500 to win the British Open. Now, he's won there twice. He's won there in 2000 and 2005. They used to go there every 5 years. But because of COVID, they had to push it off. So there are a couple of champions of St. Andrews that are in the field. There is John Daly is in the field. Louis Oosthuizen is in the field, even though Oosthuizen is part of LIV Tour. And then, of course, there's Tiger Woods. I'm trying to remember. Nick Faldo is not playing, but he won at St. Andrews in 1990. So, but this is the home of golf. And so this week, there's going to be a big celebration because of the 150th anniversary of the Open Championship. And Tiger is going to be the center of it because, again, he's a two-time St. Andrews British Open winner. I think he's won the British Open four times, but he's won it twice on that course. He says it's his favorite golf course, which is really cool because it's, you know, it's an old course and it's a course that you can play. It's not Augusta National. Well, you'll never see the inside of it as a player, even as on your own, unless you know some wealthy friends who can get you on. Pebble Beach is another one that you can play. But Pebble Beach, you have to stay at the hotel on the grounds in order to get a tee time. So it's not like you can go there. St. Andrews, you can go there, and if luck would have it, you can end up playing the old course and you can get on. So Tiger is in these practice rounds, and now people are saying, "Well, look, last time we saw Tiger play in a competitive round of golf, it was at the PGA Championship, and if we remember, he played pretty good in round one, but by round two, what happened? The leg was starting to work, have a problem, he had to pull out. So it's been 2 months, maybe it's been healed enough, but he's been walking. That's the reports, is that he's been walking, and he's been walking 40-something holes, and he's doing fine, and he can hit the ball. St. Andrews is an interesting, because people are wondering, can Tiger actually win this thing? And look, there's a cliche out there that gets used all the time. Well, I never doubt Tiger on anything. Well, let's be honest. his track record over the last 10 plus years in the majors hasn't been that great. So we've been playing the whole, I wouldn't put it past Tiger on. We've been doing that for way too long. He won the Masters in 2019, but that's it, right? That's it. He missed the cut the last time it was at St. Andrews in 2015. It was won by Zach Johnson. But I like his ability to get around that golf course. If there's one thing that Lynx Golf has, is placement of the golf ball. You better put it in the right spot, or otherwise you're in big trouble. Now, in other courses and in the majors, you can bomb it, get a relatively decent, you know, situation, whether you're 110 out, 130 out, or whatever. But at St. Andrews, it's so undulated that if you catch a slope in the wrong direction that's going towards a bunker, it might end up in a bunker. You might hit the middle of the fairway, but if it's got run, it may run, catch a hill, and slide all the way into one of the bunkers. And these bunkers are no joke. You can lose a person in these bunkers. Anytime you see a bunker with a sod wall, that's usually trouble. But they were designed, and this is the key, and this is why people like overseas, when they look at American golf construction, they get really like annoyed by it sometimes, because when we design golf courses, we design bunkers as a hazard, but a manageable hazard. It's like, oh, you're going to have to hit a 7-iron out of here instead of a 9-iron off the fairway or whatever. And now the guys are so good at plucking the ball clean out of the bunker, it's almost not a problem. But in Lynx golf, in old golf, talking about Muirfield and St. Andrews and Royal St. George's and Troon and Carnoustie and those great, you know, those great British Open courses, a lot of them in Scotland, by the way, the bunkers were designed to be a one-stroke penalty. You hit the bunker, you're supposed to just kind of flop it back out and take your shot from there, not try to get the green. So Tiger is very good at avoiding these. In 2000, he didn't hit any bunker in four rounds. And if you do a flyover of this golf course, they are everywhere. They are everywhere. There are bunkers that don't come into play at all. Like you can see a hole where off the tee, 100 yards off the tee is a bunker. No one's going to hit it. It's for me. It's like for me when I go there. Like when I go play St. Andrews, the bunker that's 100 yards off the tee is where my shot would go. And I got to play it from there, still 300 yards out. But the pros won't hit that. So a lot of the bunkers are not going to be in play for the guys, but the ones that are too dangerous. And Tiger knows how to avoid them. He's not afraid to lose distance for accuracy. And when he hits that low stinger, it's a game changer. It's a game changer. Now, I think the field is a little too strong. I think Tiger knows this course really well. He knows how to get around this golf course really well. But if the weather doesn't eat us alive at the British Open, meaning it doesn't come in full bore, this course is easy. It'll be easy. And that's the problem, is that the scores can go low at St. Andrews. Tiger can put it all in the right places, but so can a lot of other guys. And the reality is that when there's no wind and there's no weather and Mother Nature doesn't cooperate with making the British Open what the British Open is, St. Andrews is very vulnerable. Very vulnerable. But nevertheless, it's going to be great. I think it's going to be, I can't wait for Thursday morning. This is one of those courses, right, where holes share a green. And they're huge. So like you can be on the green putting and another group can be putting and you're sharing the same green, but the green is gigantic. You can putt the ball 100 feet, right? It's just, it's great. It's a great golf course. I'm so looking forward to it. Do I like Tiger's chances? Not really, but I, if he's healthy, I think he makes the cut.
Shouldn't we all just hope for this, that he makes it for 4 days?
I want him to make it for 4 days.
That's all we should really be asking for out of him.
Yeah. Because he gave up a lot. He loves the U.S. Open. He has talked about the U.S. Open being special because it's our national championship. It's our national championship. But he also knew that the 150th Open at St. Andrews, where he is a two-time winner in at St. Andrews, he had to be there. So he had to give up the grueling grind of Brookline, Massachusetts. He had to give that up so he could be here and be competitive. He wasn't going to show up and do the wave and then hope for the best and then go out. Like he's there. He's like, I want to be competitive. I can't be competitive at Brookline. I can't play it. I'm not well enough to walk the hills and to deal with the rough and everything like that in the U.S. Open. But if I take another month off and really work on my leg and really work on stability, I can go play at St. Andrews. There's going to be rough there, but it is, you know, again, if you're careful enough, you can avoid it. The problem like the U.S. Open is they tighten up the fairway so much that even if you had a good drive, you might land in the rough. And when you're in the rough, one of the things you have to do is you have to be able to be stable. You have to be able to hold your leg in place, hold your both legs in place while you make contact with the ball, because you need to be able to drive that club downwards into the turf with enough strength and power to get the ball to pop up. Same thing here in the Heather, but I think Tiger looked at it and said, well, that's a lot more manageable than what's going to happen at the Country Club. But I'm really excited about it. But I'm also looking forward to just seeing the pageantry of it. This is a special place, special tournament. I mean the road hole alone is just a beast. It's fun. It's a real fun hole. You shoot the ball over a hotel. It's great. People are on the balcony and a ball is whizzing by the balcony.
Do they search him beforehand? Because if that was me standing on the balcony, I think I would be up there with a butterfly net.
I think so, too. I'd be like snagging him out.
Yeah.
If I could reach it.
Yeah,
so
just throw it up in the air. Catch
yeah,
it, right?
When I was when I went to Las Vegas for the Mountain West Conference basketball tournament, but while I was out there, I was working on a golf show, and they got me around at a place called Royal Links, and it was one of those, we've designed every hole around a famous hole. And you're like, oh, cool. So like every hole you're on the hole, they're like, this is the 8 at Troon. This is the 2nd at Prestwick. And, you know, so it's like, it was kind of neat, right? And some of the holes I recognized, some of the holes I didn't, but still it was fun. And I got a caddy for the round because I was going to do the story with the caddy. So we were going to basically do the interview with the caddy afterwards and whatnot. And so we were doing shots of the course and whatnot. And they have a replica road hole as best they could make it. So they don't have a hotel, but they made like a big sign that is about the same size as what the players hit over when they hit the corner of the hotel. So they go over like some kind of a building, but it's a smaller building. They hit over that and it goes past the balcony. And it was really fun to play. It was really, cause you're like, you stand over it and like, the caddy was telling me, like, you want to aim right for that sign. And I'm like, I'm going to hit the sign. He goes, nah, you won't hit the sign. I go, yeah, I'm going to hit. You think you're going to hit it. Then you don't. He goes, but if you hit it on that line, you're going to be in the fairway. If you hit anything else, you're not. Well, I didn't hit the fairway, but he was adamant that he got it. And it's a little weird. Those guys have to do that, too, at the road hole in St. Andrews. They have to trust that the hotel angle that's in their way, if they fly it over that, it'll land in this very narrow fairway. But then if they hit over the green, it'll roll off. And why it's called the road hole is because it'll roll off onto a gravel road that leads to a wall. And you have to play it off the gravel or off the wall sometimes. And it just opens up a trillion possibilities. It's nuts. But that's the beauty of the old course, which begins on Thursday. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing along this morning as we do our NFC East preview. Going over the Eagles, well, some Giants, maybe some Cowboys throughout the morning this morning. Hey, right now, you deserve the network more people rely on. That's why Verizon is introducing Welcome Unlimited for just $30 a line per month for 4 lines. With auto pay plus taxes and fees, our best priced ultimate plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family. The network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on the Welcome Unlimited and are eligible only for selected promotions, including domestic, talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. All right, as we continue with sports. You like how I read the legal in a different way? That was skill, right?
Yeah. The only thing I would say, change up is go Micro Machine Man.
Oh, you got to do it a little faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always was that guy was so fascinating to me when I was a kid. He was like,
well, that's because, you know how it's fascinating? Because I just said Micro Machine Man, you instantly knew who I was.
Yeah.
Or who I'm talking about.
I think he was on That's Incredible or a show like that where back in the day with the technology they had, they recorded him speaking and then they slowed it down and he articulated everything. Because sometimes he talks so fast that you're like, oh, you're just mumbling it out. And they slowed it down and he hit every word exactly the way you're supposed to say it. He was great. He made himself some money, man. He was in a lot of different kind of commercials. You know, he had that kind of rare talent, and Madison Avenue was like, you know what? We can do that. We can use that in different ways. So, yeah, you're right. All right. Good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us on Tuesday.